This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, dear listener, and welcome to Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast with me, your host and author, Caroline Foran. This week on the series, I'm joined by Sabrina Hill. You may know her from Instagram. I asked her how she wanted me to introduce her, and she says she's just kind of given up on trying to say what it is she does. Like me, I hate that question because it's very hard to narrow it down. So she just says she's a hairdresser, and she's got a very big following on social media. She has an incredible way with words. She is the owner and head honcho at Copper Hair Salon in Cork, and a very, very important story to tell, and one that I'm not sure is particularly well known. There's a lot here that she says that she hasn't shared before, and I'm very grateful to her for her generosity with sharing and her vulnerability. And it's just more and more conversations like this that I know will slowly but surely dismantle whatever stigma is still left around our mental health difficulties. This was really important for me to listen to, and I suppose for me to trace back to my self as a younger 20 something year old, and how special it would have been to hear this then, and how validating that would have been and encouraging it would have been to see someone like Sabrina, who's doing so well and achieving great things and having great things in her life alongside carrying anxiety with her. It's not a case of getting over it and then saying that's in my rearview mirror, but learning to cope with it. And she's been through a lot. So I hope you find this episode helpful. And Sabrina is just a breath of fresh air. Thank you for listening. Sabrina Hill, I have been dying to have you on Owning It since we first met, actually, in person. And we had such good chats in a very busy environment. We were at an award ceremony, and it was not the place for anxiety chats, but you being an open book, me being an open book, naturally we just cut through the bullshit and got straight to the real chats. And I knew that you had your own experience and your own story to tell. Fast forward, we both have kids now. You already had one, you've had your second kid, it's been a long time, and we're finally sitting down to have this chat, albeit over Zoom. And I'm thrilled to have you. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much. I'm actually very honored to join you. And as I was saying earlier on, I just think it's so cool that you speak very openly about anxiety. And because I think there's so many different realms of it. I think there's so many different areas. And me being now in my 40s, I feel like I have been through so many different types of it and different types of mental health issues. Very serious, and also kind of things that I manage on a daily basis as well, and that I try to manage my best way.
It's definitely a twofold thing. I think we all, no matter what, no matter how good things are, we're all managing, and we all have different coping strategies for day-to-day stress and overwhelm. And like, there's definitely a tendency, I think, in media to conflate the two and think, you know, the word anxiety became such a buzzword of like, oh, it's just my anxiety talking. And
you know, there really is a difference between an anxious moment or a shit day and suffering and having your quality of life really negatively impacted by chronic anxiety, where it's getting in the way of the things that you need to be doing, and depression, which can sometimes, you know, come along for the ride or go hand in hand with anxiety for a lot of people. So yeah, I know you've had your fair share, and I'm just really curious, as someone, it's always really, I suppose, reassuring to hear from other people who, especially who you look at online and see doing so well and thriving and, you know, being happy and achieving goals. I think if people who follow you online see you from afar, you know, you come across, you are super bubbly and confident and full of life and positive and energetic and enthusiastic. It's hard to imagine you as someone who can be weighed down by anxiety. So take me back. Was anxiety always a feature of your life? Is it something that you've carried with you? Would you describe yourself as having always been quite an anxious person? Just start from the very beginning of the anxiety.
So now looking back, I most definitely had anxiety in my teens, particularly in kind of like my mid to late teens. I remember that there was an episode where I lost the plot over something that I can't remember, but it resulted in me ripping up a sticker book that I had at home because I was collecting stickers, and it was just like maniac. I just started tearing it apart, and there's no explanation for that, but it was obviously some form of a panic attack or some form of anxiety riddled kind of mania that I had when I was really, really young. And I didn't see anything wrong with it at the time, and I don't remember my parents ever saying anything to me about it. I've actually never discussed that with them since. But I do remember that one time, and it stands out because it doesn't seem what I would call normal behavior. Mm-hmm. But I suppose my first time really dealing with any kind of mental health issues was when I fell pregnant with my now eldest son, who's 22 years of age. And it was a pregnancy that wasn't planned. I didn't really know his father very, very well. We just kind of were only 6 months together, and I found it really, really difficult to kind of like discuss how I was feeling about it. I was deeply unhappy that I had become pregnant. I felt at the time that it was going to ruin my life, which it didn't, but I felt that I had way less options, and I didn't have many close friends. I had just kind of, I suppose, left school, and I had gone into my first job working as a hairdresser. So even with the people I was working with, I didn't know everybody that well. And now looking back, even when I was younger, I don't know, did I ever really have very close friendships kind of like I have now? I think maybe it was something that I put up a little barrier when I was younger. Roll on giving birth to my little baby, and I will never forget the fear that I felt inside in the hospital after I gave birth. And I remember my mother leaving and me grabbing onto her and begging her not to leave me. I was so scared. I didn't know what to do. I was like 19, 20 years of age, but I actually looked like I was about 15 years of age. I remember when the nurses used to come in, they used to actually speak to my mother instead of speaking to me, because I just looked so young sitting inside in the bed. And I must have looked so scared as well. And I remember I made the decision to breastfeed, mostly because I wanted to prove that I was an extremely good mother and that I was someone that was going to be able to take care of my child. And I had great difficulties actually with breastfeeding. Number one, there wasn't a huge amount of support. Number two, I had my baby quite early, so it was a bit of a shock. He was about 5 weeks early, so okay. I didn't make any lactation kind of classes or anything. And breastfeeding didn't suit me, or it didn't suit Aaron. He was too hungry. I wasn't producing enough milk. I don't know if I had someone, a nurse, to sit with me and explain things to me, it might have been different. But given what I was going through, it was horrific. I got mastitis. I was very, very unwell. And I had quite a few people say things to me that I probably took up an awful lot worse, but they most certainly should not have said them, like things like, oh, I had no problem breastfeeding mine. I had a nurse come to the house, the usual nurse that comes around, and they mention another mother down the road who had given birth really recently as well, and said how she was coping on great, and if I just put the effort in, I would be okay. And I even remember after a very good GP gave me tablets to stop my milk flow because I was very, very unwell. I actually ended up having a temperature and getting very sick with mastitis. And I remember the nurse coming back to the house and saying, you should give it a go again. You should really give it a go again. And there was a whole lot of me not actually being able to talk and me being so confused and hormones all over the place that I started to really feel like I was a burden on everyone. And in particular, I was a burden on my baby, and that I was no good, and that I was going to be no good as a mother to him or to any of my family. And when Aaron was about 4 months old, I made an attempt on my life, a very serious one. And I ended up inside an intensive care and inside in a hospital for a number of weeks, and then transferred to a psychiatric unit in Cork, St. Stephen's, where I spent quite a lot of time, very heavily medicated. And I went through bouts of what would be called postpartum psychosis. And it was a really, really scary time. It was very scary for my family, I would say as well, because I was very heavily medicated. So there was parts of that where I wouldn't actually remember, thankfully. But unfortunately for my family, they do remember. And it's very, very hard to deal with that when you have never had any experience of it in the past.
And you're so young. I mean, like, this is a fact that keeps coming up in every episode, but it bears repeating. Not until you're 25 years of age has your prefrontal cortex fully developed, and that's the adult part of your brain. Like, you were plunged into adulthood and dealing with these things that your brain wasn't even mature enough to handle.
I was so young. But the one thing I remember out of the whole lot of it was feeling like I was a burden. And I think that it's one of the only things. I love everything that happened in my life, no matter how bad it is, because I have learned the most greatest lessons. It actually has made me a great leader, a great communicator. I feel like I run a business better, and that I communicate with everybody that works for me and other people in my life in a much greater way because of all these life experiences. But the one thing I really, really wish that I could have grabbed hold of me and told me was, do not feel you are a burden on anyone. Because any time that I have gone through something, and I've kept quiet about it, any time that any of my friends have gone through something, the one thing I always notice, particularly with us women, is that we don't want to discuss it because we feel like we're a burden. And if you could just remove that stigma, and if you could just remove that really horrible feeling, and you would pick up the phone, you would ring someone, you would speak with someone, you wouldn't kind of feel like that you were a burden on anyone, and it would stop so much of the bad feelings or the anxiety and the mental health issues that can take hold.
Where do you think that feeling of being a burden came from? I mean, was that something that you firmly believed about yourself? Or
I think it's generational. I think it's Catholic guilt. I really do believe that. I think that times are much more different now. Even I look at the way that, like, I converse with staff. There's a beautiful girl that works with me, just gave birth. She's the same age as what I was when I gave birth to Aaron. She gave birth the other day, and it was wildly different conversations that I was having with her than what my boss had with me at the time. You know, it's like, I think that we treat people differently now, and we are more aware of people's mental health issues. And even if they don't have them, we still make people more aware of these things. So generally, I think when it comes to what I went through, it's no one's fault, but it's definitely generational. Like, it wasn't that long when you think about it. Mm. It wasn't that long that women came out of the laundries and came out of all of these horrendous institutions, and the next phase was always going to be difficult to navigate compared to where we are now.
Absolutely. How much do you believe that your suffering at that time was down to it being turmoil within you, or it being turmoil within you in the context of a very mentally, like, we didn't have the conversations that we're having now. There was a lot more shame, a lot more stigma. Like, if you had plucked yourself from at that time and placed you into 2024, same person, same age, how do you think you would have fared?
I know exactly what you mean. And I suppose it'll be explained so much more in the second part of my story.
Right.
Because what I went through in my, when I first gave birth to my child, actually my first child, when I went into hospital, almost identical thing happened to me about 7-8 years ago. And very, very nearly ended up becoming a huge issue. Because after I gave birth to Aaron, and when I got very, very unwell, there was about 8 years of me doing hardcore therapy to get to where I am now. I did lots of different kinds. I did hypnotherapy. I did cognitive behavioral therapy. It's absolutely amazing. It's taught me so many amazing things in my life and how to deal with situations and how to deal with the me inside my head talking to me. And I think everybody needs to do therapy of some kind. Everybody, to have successful relationships with their partners, with their parents, with their children. I think it's just, it needs to be. However, about 8 years ago, I went through, maybe a little even bit longer now, I went through a separation. And it was a horrendous time in my life. And I started to feel very, very depressed. Now, I'm a person that would have always ran on a little bit of anxiety. Mm-hmm. So how I would describe it is that I am naturally quite hyper. And I perform very well when I have that little bit of buzzy energy in me. And I would always think, right, my anxiety is a little bit like that. Sometimes it can be too much, but if I'm at a certain level, I have learned to live with it and I quite enjoy it because it gives me a bit of fuel to get to where I want to be. I suppose I work as a hairdresser as well. I need that energy and I kind of perform a little bit all day when I'm around people. You have to be like literally with it.
Optimal anxiety. There is 100% or more adaptive anxiety as opposed to maladaptive.
Yeah. So, and I enjoy that. However, it was a really big shock to my system when I got separated because I got deeply depressed. And that was something that I can't even remember being when I first gave birth to Aaron. I don't remember feeling that low. I felt very, very low. And I remember going to my doctor and saying to her, I feel so, so depressed. And I think I need to take an antidepressant. I need something to help me through this because this part of my life is just absolutely horrendous. I only see darkness and I just see no way out. And I would have been very good for talking at that stage. And I had lots of close friends around me and that I had great conversations with. And it would seem to be like the best thing to do. And I remember starting my medication and it was mad. Within that 24 hours, I started getting jittery. I started getting quite shaky. And I remember thinking, there's something really wrong here. There's something very wrong with me. And I ended up going back to the doctor the following day. But no, it was actually about 2 days later. And I remember sitting with her going, there's something very wrong with me. She said, no, you just have some anxiety. And I was really adamant. I was kind of like, no, I have presented myself very depressed. I definitely don't have any anxiety. And this feels very physical. And there is something. And there's something really wrong here. So after chatting with her, we decided, we both agreed that I was going to increase, she was going to increase the dosage and I was going to take it. And within another day or two, I ended up getting very, very unwell. So unwell that I had severe shakes. I wanted to peel the skin off my face and I ended up getting to the point of where I was doing continuous walking. I'm sitting in my kitchen now, but continuous walking around the island, couldn't stop. It was manic. It was really, really, really manic. And I was very, very lucky that I ended up going to see a clinical psychologist who said, you are of no harm to yourself, but there's something else going on here. And I think you need to go see a clinical psychiatrist. And I did. I went to a clinical psychiatrist who said, you were having a major issue with the medication that you're on. I am going to wean you off these and we're going to put you on something else. So in that space of time, around 6 months, I was weaned off this medication. I also had to go on beta blockers because my heart was palpitations the whole time and I could not stop shaking. And it actually wasn't until that I got pregnant with my now 10-month-old son, Robin, that I made the decision with my consultant obstetrician that I would go sit down with the perinatal team in CUMH. And I had the most interesting chat with one of the psychiatrists there who diagnosed me with akathisia, which is something that you can get from taking certain types of medication that have a huge toxicity issue with your person. So a lot of antidepressants. Now, it's a very rare thing. And he even said in his case of all his years at work, he had only ever seen one other person with it. And it was very clear and obvious that is what I had. And he described everything to me, and I have listened and read up on so much things since. And some of the main medications that cause this are antidepressants, the newer types of antidepressants, the very, very new ones. And also decongestants can trigger this as well as another type of medication that can really trigger this. And it comes across as being absolutely severe anxiety.
Yeah.
Horrendous. And of course, I do suffer from anxiety anyway, and I always have. So to me, it would be just like the beginnings of this and getting worse. And I cannot blame my GP because she definitely was looking out for me. And it's so rare that it's something that if you have someone to present themselves with severe depression, and then after starting taking a medication, your mood can go up and down and your actions can become that of anxiety. So of course you would increase the dosage to try and balance things out. And for me, that didn't work, but it was a really massive, great thing to learn because I now realize I have so many types of anxiety. And for me, they actually need to be treated medically very different. I would say, so going back to what I would say is when I was younger, when you were talking about what I went through when I was younger, I needed to have a lot of therapy then. It was definitely the type of anxiety where I needed to train my brain to deal with some of the things that I was going through. I would not say that it was hormonal in any way. I would definitely say that it was the medication that I was on that caused that postpartum psychosis that time.
So would you say that the postpartum psychosis was probably caused by the medication you were put on at the time, but there was also would have been an element of postpartum anxiety, depression at play?
Absolutely.
I think like that would have
absolutely been an element. There was no doubt in my mind that I wasn't able to manage or cope with that, with the situation that I was in as a 20-year-old who really didn't know Aaron's dad that very well at the time, and not have many friends and feeling very, very isolated. Like none of my friends that I went to school with had babies. I felt almost like I was dirty. I felt that my life was over. Any opportunities I would have had, and that definitely had an effect on me with regards being depressed and having anxiety. But when I went on medication, there's no doubt in my mind that I got clinically so much, so much worse. Yeah. And I could even see that they had tried all different types of medication on me. And now that when they did put me onto much older types of medication, antidepressants, amitriptyline was one of them, I was so much better.
Oh, wow.
And I got a whole lot better. And finally, when I came out of hospital, and I was at the point where they were going to do electric shock therapy. They were at that point where they felt that that was what they needed to do.
You were 20.
With me. Yes. 21 at that stage. I was 21.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
They had tried so many different treatments and medications that I can understand from their point of view as well, where this is quite a rare thing. So it's not something that they would have thought of. And as we just said, I was 100% suffering from depression and anxiety because of the situation I was in. So it went side by side. It was just that I got clinically worse. And it was a decision by my parents and by my GP that I should come home and that we would throw the kitchen sink at it. We would go to therapy and we would go talk it out. I guess. And that really, really worked very, very well for me. I was so grateful that when I did move on, when I was getting separated and I went through all this again, that I knew myself very well, that I was able to have that conversation, sit back and kind of go, hang on now, Sabrina, how bad are things? And what way are you physically feeling? And I knew that what I was going through was physically very bad and that it wasn't so much my depression that I was suffering from that time, but there was something else. There was an element of something else that was actually making me much worse.
I think it's incredibly validating when you can put your finger on something and say, and know for sure, like, I was right about this and I had to trust my gut and I knew something wasn't right. Because so often, especially when we're anxious or overwhelmed, and especially for new mothers, you know, you can feel so out of your depth, and that instinct for yourself or for your child can get so suppressed and silenced. And you know, I remember my own mom had a story of her own when she, after she had her baby, you know, my brother is same age as you. And he, when she had him, she didn't feel right after giving birth. And the doctors kept saying she was just being hysterical, dramatic, and she was fine. And she's like, no, I'm really, really not okay. And all the nuns, and again, it was quite a Catholic sort of time, she was really kind of gaslit, and as it turned out, they had left some gauze inside her that had gotten severely infected and was very, very at risk of being, you know, a goner. And it was so hard for her to advocate for herself in that context, in that time, you know, with being made feel so small. I suppose how important it is when you do get that validation. I was right, and I know myself, and I know my body. And despite anxiety and despite thoughts that can spin off and catastrophize, you'll never let yourself down in that regard. Like that's a learning that you'll never lose.
If I didn't do the amount of therapy that I did, there's no way that I would have been in the position to actually speak up for myself or understand myself that way. Because now that I am postpartum again, I started feeling horrific anxiety over the last couple of months, which has been very different from the other anxiety that I've had for my whole 40 years.
Yeah.
And I had a horrendous pregnancy.
I know. So
that was, it was, oh.
I always say that it feels like everyone else's pregnancy just goes by in the blink of an eye. Watching yours from afar, I was like, how is she still here? How is she still doing this? This is horrendous. And like, I just felt for you so much because I had a glimpse of it. Like I was sick, but I wasn't your level of sick. And oh my God. So before we get on to the pregnancy anxiety and life now, something that I would struggle with is having gone through something so scary and so there's sort of looking back over your shoulder thinking, will this get me again? How did it feel for you to be heading down the path of becoming a parent again, even if it's 20 years later, 21 years later? What was the anxiety like going into a situation that you knew before had put you into such a vulnerable state?
Zero fear. Well, I had zero fear. I was going along to the perinatal team to keep other people happy at the start. And I went just to explain my situation. And and it was a grand chat. I would say that I had a much nicer chat with the consultants than I did with the nurse that was on, because I felt very out of control because they wanted to be more involved, where I was just kind of going in and letting them know, I actually feel very, very well. I'm here to let you know, this is my story of what happened the last time. Yeah. But I feel very in control. But my consultant obstetrician felt it was very good for me to come and talk to. So do my family, but I have a great support system. I'm very vocal and it's totally fine. I had been the week or two before I actually, because Robin was an IVF baby, but the week before we got the egg implanted and the whole lot, the week before I got divorced. So I was actually like literally in the middle of a really horrible, horrible, horrible divorce. My uncle had just passed away as well, who I'm quite close, but was always close, but very dear member of our family. And I was in the middle of this IVF and I should have been raging, hormonal, everything. And I was completely fine. I was grand and I got pregnant and it was amazing until week 9. And then obviously things took off, but I never once questioned that my mental health would dip. At this stage, I didn't know I had akathisia either. So like I didn't have to rely on the fact that, oh, there's actually a medical term for what happened to me years ago, more understanding. So zero. I would put that down to being in a very, very solid relationship with my now partner. And also having been very in control about making the decision about getting pregnant. I think that was kind of like where my lack of anxiety, I should say. And I do think sometimes, had I been less sick, would I have been more anxious? Maybe. I'm kind of thinking I was so overtaken by the migraines and by the actual hyperemesis that I'm not sure if I had more time to think, would I have had a little bit more anxiety? Like, for instance, I only had this discussion the other day about how I feel like at the moment I'm grieving the fact that we're making the decision not to have any more children. And I think now if I was pregnant, I would have more anxiety about how is the business going to run itself? How was I going to afford everything to keep my son in college? And also kind of like I have a child here. I think I would have more life anxiety about how things were going to run out. But I had zero. I was in a cloud of happiness when I was pregnant. It was a lot. Except for the sickness, Caroline.
Just a small little minor issue. Because I mean, I was, like I was saying, I was quite sick in my pregnancy. But like you, there was no space to be anxious about what would come. I went into it completely blindly thinking that if I could get through the pregnancy, the rest would be just a walk in the park. It wasn't to be the case. And I remember thinking of labour as like the finish line. You obviously had a lot more insight going into it, that you knew that it wasn't necessarily, you know, easy peasy after, but you had a better framework this time. You were, you know, you wanted this to happen. You were very active in the choice. So then when you had beautiful, beautiful Robin, and finally the physical nausea and the sickness and everything gives you a break. I hope it gave you a complete break the minute he came out, did it?
No, the first day was horrendous. And I was actually, poor Dean was going to the hospital going, how am I going to feed him or how am I going to do all this? And I was like, babe, it's okay. I've done this before. You don't have to worry about this. And then I was literally in a bed for the full day in recovery. I had a bit of a reaction to the anesthetic. I would say that's what it was. Oh. And I was just annoyed. Hyperemesis for the full day now. I didn't hold my child properly until the following day, but it was grand. It was fine. See, there's a whole part of it as well, is that I was very in control. So this is the greatest thing that happens when you're in your 40s. I'm putting this down to age. I was 100% having a section. I had been through enough in my pregnancy that I asked my doctor, could I have a section? I got a section. In the end, I would have had to have a section because of the way the baby was lying. But that's neither here nor there. It was something I wasn't dealing with. I chose to formula feed because of my experience that I had with breastfeeding. Yeah. And the more that I got sick during my pregnancy, the more that I was definitely, definitely going formula feeding. So I went to a nurse, a lactation nurse, to get help on how I was going to formula feed. Like the only anxiety I actually had was trying to pick a buggy. Literally, because everything was as planned as it could be. And I think I work better as a person that. So when he came, it was completely fine.
Wow.
But my illness and my sickness, like my migraines and the likes of that, that only gave me a small break. And they returned very, very quickly when Robin was about, I know I kept a lot of this up social media. I haven't told really anybody about all of this, actually, to be honest with you. They came back with a bang. I ended up getting severe migraines and getting very, very unwell again. And the fun
but it was not pregnancy related.
No. My anxiety came back. I was standing inside in work and I was starting to have panic attacks while I was doing people's hair. And I was like, oh my God, what is actually wrong with me? And again, the anxiety part that got blinded because I was getting bad migraines. And like when you get a migraine, you know, you've suffered from different types of pain, your back pain and everything. So when you get that type of pain, you cannot concentrate on anything. It takes over your body. And eventually I went to see an endocrinologist, Dr. Mary Ryan.
Oh, love Mary. She's been on the podcast.
She's amazing. And would you believe that she diagnosed me with a severe hormone problem that I have been suffering from since I was 17 years of age, and just about explains everything from when I was 17 and I got my first period, because I was quite old, 17 years of age. Last, I would say November, when I started taking medication, and would you believe she put me on a microdose of amitriptyline every night to shut down my pituitary gland, to actually stop my adrenal glands going, and to actually calm my nerves and help me sleep better. And I'm on progesterone in the morning. Because the only times that I never ever, that I could actually honest to God say, I've never ever been on edge, and the times I've been most calm in my life were during my IVF cycle when I was getting progesterone every single day. And I have had countless endometriosis surgeries because I've suffered from that through the years. And my very last surgery, they put an implant in me that released progesterone. I was very well for those 7 years that was inside me as well.
Wow.
So after sitting down and having all of these chats, Dr. Ryan put me on progesterone every single morning. I'm on that. And we are now at the point where Dean has said to me, you're never coming off that tablet, are you? Like,
oh my God.
They will have to bury me with it.
I mean, obviously, anxiety, it's always hormonal.
So many different types.
Degree, but would you say that you're, over the span of your life thus far, the level at which you've suffered with anxiety has been really strongly linked to a hormonal issue?
I would say that it was, yeah, very, very much strongly linked to that. But I would also say that there has been certain things that have happened in my life. Like, not many people go through the level of divorce that I went through, or go through certain things like having a child when you're 19, 20 years of age. Yeah. That even if I didn't have that issue, I would have most definitely suffered from depression and anxiety. There is no doubt in my mind that sometimes I look at things like in the space of 1 month, I was in court with a divorce. I'd lost my uncle and I was going through IVF. That would test anybody. It would test anybody, and it would give someone anxiety and depression. But I feel that definitely the level of hormonal issues that has been there has definitely contributed a huge amount.
I really admire how confident you are, despite what you've been through, even about the really severe bouts of sickness and anxiety, because I would say one of my biggest challenges is, and I'll often have flare-ups of anxiety purely triggered by the fear of going back there and it taking over again, and almost like a scene of the crime memory of even if I look at photos of myself from that time, or I remember something. I
remember that, right? And I do remember what you're talking about there. And I genuinely think hypnosis had a massive role to play in stopping the triggers, because there was definitely things from my younger years that I would say would have triggered me severely. Like, you, had I heard a certain song, or had I seen a certain place, or traveling through a certain place or something like that, would have really, really triggered me. And then the only reason I'm saying that is because now that I'm in my 40s, and when I go through bouts of anxiety, I find my mind runs back. Like when I'm driving, if my mind is allowed, I will run through scenarios of things. And I could even go back to situations where I had a female friend that just dropped me out of the blue. I will never know why, but it was probably the one of the most destructive things that ever happened to me and put me in therapy more than anything else in my life that was horrible would have. It was horrendous. It's nothing short of horrendous. And actually, anytime I talk about it online, a huge amount of women say it to me, it's worse than a breakup.
Oh, yeah.
And I would still sometimes, in the middle of, say, an anxious period, and I would say this only going back a week or two, find my mind trailing back to a scenario thinking about this person. And not a scenario that had happened, but just kind of nearly a made up thing in my head that would make my breath work a little bit faster, that my heart would beat a little bit faster. And like, yeah, you could say that maybe hormonal things could contribute to that, but like that's anxiety that we all go through as humans from different things that have happened to us. So I know that if my brain does that with those certain things, but there are things in my past that should haunt me so much more, I do feel the hypnotherapy, which was a last resort in some way, 100% helped with the whole trigger kind of thing.
Breaking the association of a lot of those things.
Yeah. And it's actually something that, should this continue, because at the moment I'm in my happy place going, this is definitely hormonal. But if I, let's say, could see a pattern starting to continue going, there's no doubt in my mind I would go back to hypnotherapy over all of the other therapies that I've done, because I really feel that I benefit from that so much.
That's amazing. I mean, I think people always try to see like which is the better therapy, but it really depends so much on where you're coming from, how it works for you, how it makes you feel. If something can, I mean, obviously hypnotherapy works in a very specific way. And I did a recent episode with a Stanford psychiatrist about how scientific it is, because we often think of it as such a funny idea. But even when it comes to other more alternative therapies, which I would question a lot myself, I always come back to the conclusion of, well, like if it works for you and if it can reduce your stress response and regulate your nervous system, it doesn't really matter like what it is. If it's something that can get you out of that hyper anxious, hypervigilant state and keep you grounded, and the more time you can spend in that calm rest and digest place, then the better, as long as it's, you know, safe and legal and healthy to do so. So it's amazing that you found something that you feel that confident about, that you know you could tap back into if you needed to.
And another thing as well, and I think it's worth saying, is that therapists are human as well. And I have come across, in my time of having gone to lots of therapists, I've come across two questionable therapists. One who was very, very experienced, I would say, from a medical point of view, and did me no good in my situation. And I think that sometimes it's okay to go to someone and after two visits or three visits to kind of say, look, this isn't for me. You aren't for me. I think that's very, very important as well.
And it's really hard to try. Yeah.
Yeah, because you can kind of get blinded by the fact that even someone else can say to you, oh, but you're unwell.
Yeah.
And that's not a nice thing. And
people pleasing can keep you going to them because you don't want to let them down. That's my downfall.
Yeah, no, and that's actually huge. That is huge. That is something that in the past I would have very much been so, but I think it's very important now that if you're not gelling, they're working with your brain. If you don't, if you hear something that's questionable, maybe it's time to move to someone else and keep going, because you will find your person. Do you know? The person that I went to for a huge amount of time, I was seeing her for 8 years, and I actually remember not particularly liking her. I remember thinking she's like a newsreader. She was just very cold and everything, but she served me so well and taught me different ways on how to use my brain and how to kind of like jump out of really bad patterns of thinking.
It's amazing how much you credit people in your life who've helped you. You know, I think we often feel like we have to just figure things out on our own, and there's no shame in needing expertise and support there, especially at a vulnerable time in your life. I wouldn't be where I am without the various CBT and different things as well. You touched on your tricky divorce, a very difficult time in your life. What would you say to someone who's either in a situation thinking, I know this is going in one direction and I'm terrified of how it'll impact me, and someone who's maybe where you were thinking, how am I ever going to feel any differently?
Actually, I had an absolutely amazing solicitor who became a very, very close friend of mine, and she gave me the wisest words going through all of it. She was a huge support in one way. And I remember she chatted to me one time about having empathy, because I think it's something, and I noticed it because I've spoken to some people since. I didn't notice it before I was in that situation myself, but I really noticed it since, that there's a lot of anger around going through something like this. There's a lot of anger towards each other and each person. And she said something to me one day, and I think it's really important, even when you're starting to go through the motions of all of this, even at the beginning, it's very important that you pity them. Because if you pity them, you can't hate them. And I thought it was actually one of the best pieces of advice I ever got. Because rather than get yourself worked up, and if you're already in a state where you have quite a lot of anxiety about a situation, which you 100% will, if you then get into this cycle of actually really, really being hateful, and it's just because of the situation you're in, it can be a very dangerous place to be, because it'll raise every single bit of anxiety that you have to a whole other level. And I remember her saying that, and it's stuck with me since. And I've passed that on to a few people who I know were going through a real turmoil time, you know, and having like real physical anxiety effects. It's just, you just need to get to the stage where you just have pity.
That's amazing advice. And it's also true, and something that we forget, that like that level of anger is also an expression of anxiety. Like we talk about fight or flight, and it's the fight part, you know, it's a protective mechanism of wanting to just look after yourself by throwing out this anger. So it can often come back to the same root as the more fearful feelings as well.
Yeah. There was two other things as well that served me very well. That was one of the ones that kind of stood out to me. The other one was, I thought this was so crazy, but I had, and I had a severe habit of talking badly to myself, of like literally getting into this whole cycle of literally just talking, going through conversations with someone that I don't speak to anymore, and just really, really horrendous, going over and over and over and over. It's like a train going around in a circle constantly. And I remember a therapist saying to me, think of somebody you went to school with that you really disliked. I'm going to make up a name now here, by the way, because I'm not going to use the names that I use. But I was just like, Karen. You think Karen. I'm only saying it now. Think Karen. It's not because of anyone. And she said, well, what you need to do is when you start having that, you need to get it into your head that it's actually Karen saying these things to you. You need to turn around and you need to tell Karen to shut the up and stop saying these things, and just tell Karen to get out of the house, get out that door, get out. And you actually stop that cycle of you speaking, as silly as it sounds, because I remember looking at the therapist going, she's crazy. And I have done that many, many times since, and we don't realize how we can leave the Karens come into our life and stand behind us and speak like that and speak like that. And you just have to say, you're doing me no favors. Like, you're doing, Karen, you're doing me no favors by speaking like this, because you're just trying to drive me mad. And I'm having no time for this. There's none. And that really, really helped me as well.
Speaking of Karens, and no disrespect to anyone with the name Karen, I know lots of lovely Karens.
Exactly. I do too. I'm related to one.
But you do have a massive following online. You've garnered such a loyal legion of fans for your honesty, your personality, just being really down to earth and humble, and you know, your style and your hair and your expertise and everything. But I'm sure it doesn't come without its share of people who want to see you trip up or take you down, tell you who do you think you are. How do you handle that?
Cognitive behavioral therapy, basically. I'm like, literally, I have skin of a rhino. Okay. And I think sometimes I take the piss out of people themselves that behave that way towards me. So obviously, if it's someone that kind of like jumps in to my DMs and they want to be famous, I will reshare something. I won't reshare people's faces or kind of names, but I will reshare stuff. I haven't done that now in a long, long time. But in general, I just pity someone that comes into my DMs to literally have a go at me, because it really does. That's another kind of issue where I can, or another way I go back to the whole pity thing. I do genuinely pity them, because I've never gone in to a strange person's page and gone and private messaged them something nasty in any way. And why they mightn't see it as being nasty, it is kind of nasty. You're a bit of a bitch if you kind of jump into someone's DMs and you start giving out to them.
You know exactly what
if you're
doing.
Don't know them.
Yeah.
Exactly. But I just do have pity in them. So what I do is I just let them see that I've read it. And then I do a winky and a kiss. And I put them into Narnia. Narnia, just see, is, you know, your primary and you have general and you have kind of like Lithuania. I see general is in here. That's what I call Narnia. It's like the door and the wardrobe. Once you go in there, you never come back out. So I put a lot of people in there and I never go in there ever, ever, ever again. So I put them in there because I leave them there as a follower, because they're quite good for my engagement. So they're the type of people that will watch my stories all the time. And like, I am an influencer at the end of the day. So when I send my insights in the back end of my Instagram off to my agency to get me work, I'm very proud of all the little kind of people that are in Narnia who actually keep my engagement up. I'm very thankful for them. I wouldn't have the career that I have today only for them.
Oh my God, I love that. I am like way too active with the block button and I'm actually just denying
myself. Leave them there. Leave them there. Put them into Narnia. It's like another country. It's like a little desert island out in the middle of the Atlantic, and you don't even know what the weather is like out there. And if you put them there, you never know about them. But they'll add to your engagement. They're good for business, girl. They're good for business.
So true. Before I let you go, I want to just go back to the postpartum anxiety round two. Where are you at with it now? How are you feeling? What has helped you this time? Is it really a case of the progesterone and what Dr. Mary Ryan prescribed for you? Do you think being a bit older has helped you, and just having the experience and history that you have it behind you of knowing what's what and being able to see when things aren't necessarily feeling right for you?
I think that medication has really, really helped me. Okay. I think taking like the amitriptyline is a microdose that I'm taking at nighttime. It is a psychotic psychosis medication. It's an antidepressant, but it's a very strong one. I'm taking a microdose of it, and it is definitely keeping me calm, and the progesterone is as well. I would say that I have learned to live with my anxiety, and I don't think my anxiety is ever going to go away. But I think the worst of it has been kept at bay from the medication that I'm on. And it's actually because a friend spoke to me recently and she said to me, do you think you should go for therapy just with everything you've been through in the last 2 years? And I actually said, I don't know why, I'm still trying to figure this out, but I think therapy right now would be bad for me. Just at this moment in time, I'm coping very well. And I think it wouldn't be great for me right now. I've always had this knack of knowing when was the right time to go. And I'm very, very lucky in a weird way that I am of an age where I have found my little group of women and we all seem to be feeling the same. So I would say it's an age thing as well. Perimenopause, we're kind of going into another kind of level of our lives. And I think we're all going through it. And there's definitely a sisterhood there that when you are like that. And it's so spoken about now. Like you said, you've had Mary Ryan on. So you know exactly how well spoken. And like, you're doing such a service for everyone by you doing this podcast, because it's more talked about now. And I feel that us as women, we can be each other's therapists as well. Obviously, we'll tell each other, you've got major problems this day. You need to go and you need to have a chat with a therapist. But in general, I think that we speak very well now. And I feel we've gotten to the point of where, yes, we do too much and we mask it, but we mask it unknowingly. But I don't think we actually feel a burden when we get to a certain age.
Last question. Do you feel that, I feel like when we met the first time, I don't know that you had really many kind of public conversations about your experience to date. And it was probably, you know, being an influencer at that time was very much best foot forward. How important is it to you now as an influencer, as someone who's very front facing, you know, working with brands, fashion, beauty, hair, how important is it to you to also bring this element to the fore as well? Just and for yourself and for other people?
I think I'm obliged to do it. I think that it's so, so important that I do it. I have a platform. It needs to be spoken about. And I think that I would be hiding the best part of myself if I didn't actually speak about it. Because someone said to me a while back, like, where do you get your confidence from? And I said, it's from being honest. That's what it is. It's not confidence in one way. It's just me being honest. And that is a huge part of my life. It's something we deal with every single day. So why we wouldn't talk about it, or why would we hide it? Particularly when we're so lucky that we are able to speak to, I'm able to speak to you, or we are able to speak to Mary Ryan or different people, that we can relay our own experiences that may help so many others. Yeah. I think it's like, I'm obligated to actually speak about it. I need to speak about it.
Well, I appreciate it. And I know, you know, if I rewind 10 years ago, which is when my anxiety story, well, actually, I mean, I've always been a bit of an anxious mess, but it was when I really... It's really only when I realized it and when shit hit the fan, how incredible it would have been to go on social media and see someone as accomplished and gorgeous and friendly and bubbly and nice and...
Oh, girl.
you know, do what you're doing and also say, hey, I have really struggled with this as well. And I am here in spite of it. I'm here. It's here alongside me. It's not just... And it's not... I really think it's important to say... And I always want to be careful of this. I don't ever want to just talk to people after they've gone through something and say, well, now I'm fine. So now you're socially acceptable to come out and talk about it. No, it's okay if you're in the middle of it right now. It's a work in progress. It's okay if tomorrow you have a big whopper of a panic attack. It's not going to take from anything you've said here. It's not going to take away anything you've learned. It's not going to take away any progress you've made at all. So I think it's, I know, you know, I think of a younger girl in her early 20s in a situation maybe like you were, having your baby so young, hopefully listening to this and feeling like, okay, you know, the future is bright. I'm going to figure this out. There are supports there, and confidence is, it's unapologetic honesty and just showing up as you are, how you are, and the people that are worth it and is worthy of you will stay through it.
Absolutely. And I think that it's really important to remember that when you and I went through that your decade ago and me 20 years ago, that was our tsunami. Mm-hmm. And I think what we can say now to everyone out there is that there are aftershock waves and they'll always be there. The sea is never going to always be calm, but you'll never have the tsunami again.
So true. And I actually need to write that down in my diary and remember next time I get worried.
Yeah, it's a little wave. It's an aftershock wave. It's not the tsunami. We've been there. We'll cope better.
I can't thank you enough for your time. I know you're such a busy mom and it's late and you've had a day and a half. So I hope you get to put your feet up now. I hope the little man stays asleep for you and you can rest. And just honestly, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for being so generous with your story.
Oh, no, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It has been an honor. I really do mean that. Thank you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
The easiest way to access Owning It Real Time is to head to the link in the episode description or episode details, whatever you call them, show notes. You will find the link in there at the top. You can sign up right away for Owning It Real Time and access the full library of 10 situation-specific audio guides that will help you own your anxiety even more than you've ever done before.